Like the previous speakers, I struggled with just how to go about what I was going to say, and finally decided that I was simply going to tell four stories. The first story is Bert the Bulldog. Back in the 80s, I guess Campbell sold a Bowen ratio system with a General Eastern hygrometer. And it, do you recognize the truck, John, in the picture? about that time, we came out with a 6262 CO2 and water differential analyzer. And Bert was really interested in putting those two things together. And so he came to Lincoln to talk about it. And in principle, it should be pretty simple. We have a differential analyzer. We've got two inputs from the Bowen ratio system and some sort of flow switching thing. So there's two combinations of flow there, so you can reverse the flows and get rid of offsets. But in reality, it was not that simple. And we went through the equations that govern the analyzer with Bert a few times, and you've got a it's a differential analyzer, but you need to know the reference pretty well. And that means you got to scrub the reference cell to measure what's in the sample cell. And also, there's a potential of a common mode problem where you zero, it's one thing, but if you put, say, 400 on both sides, you have to re-zero it. So that meant life was not so simple. But one way that it could be done simply would have been to run the analyzer in absolute mode where you keep the reference scrubbed, and then just flow swap between the two levels, and occasionally you could put a zero in there to zero it. Well, Bert didn't want any part of that because, you know, by golly, it was a differential analyzer, and he wanted continuous differential measurements. So that brought us to the general solution, which you needed about five or six combinations of flow to make this thing work, to get all the calibration issues taken care of, and he hated that. So we went through the equations again and again and again. He was looking for some way. His intuition said there is a way to do this easily. And toward the end of the day, I remember I was getting kind of bemused and then annoyed, and I didn't say anything, but I'm thinking, Bert, deal with it. You know, it's the way it works. Well, he went back to Logan, and a few days later, I got a phone call. And by golly, he'd figured out a way to do it. He took our equations, rearranged them, and rigorously showed that instead of scrubbing the reference cell, you could periodically scrub the sample. Never touch the reference. Scrub the sample, and you would get all the information you'd need to get. And it only took three flow combinations to do it. And that's the way that got implemented. And so that's a case of his getting his teeth into a problem and not letting go until he fixed it. Story number two is Bert the Cooperator. This is a story about an app note that we did and the Great Sorghum Field Campaign of 1992. Back in those days, we would get periodic questions from people using our photosynthesis system to measure photosynthesis on leaves. How can I scale these up to the whole canopy? And being a good student of John Norman, I'd give some hand-waving answer about how you could go about doing that. But our marketing director, Larry Middendorf, decided that wasn't good enough. We needed an app note to tell people how to do this. So he asked John if he would help us. And John, of course, never met a scaling question he didn't want to tackle. So he agreed to do that. And we worked on this app note. And toward the end, it became clear we really needed a test case. We needed to go make the measurements, jump through the hoops we were telling people to do, and at the same time make some large area flux measurements, then just to verify that we were predicting something in the ballpark. So the question basically was how to get from the measurements on the left to estimate something like you'd get on the right. And this was the days before we had things like on the right to measure that. So we needed help for the flux measurements, and I called up Bert. Now, there wasn't too much in it for him. I mean, he didn't have a dog in this hunt, but it was a chance to be in the field with John, and it was a chance to check out these new Bowen ratio systems that CO2 Bowen ratio systems that they had. So Bert agreed. He grumbled a bit about having to be in Lincoln in July, but he agreed and showed up in force. He came with Joel and Ed Switek, who had just been hired like the day before this road trip. And once you've got John and Bert Tanner, you have a critical mass. And from then on, it's easy to add people. Bill Dugas came up from Texas. He was supposed to do stem flow measurements, but he somehow wormed his way out of it and just came to watch. You notice every picture of Bert in the field, he has this nail apron. Has this been the same nail apron all these years? Or is John Norman, of course, was there. He brought Tim Wilson with him. Notice the 1D Sonic up there and the air intake to the 6262. John Baker came down from Minnesota. He's setting up his conditional sampling scheme. And, of course, we had some help from people at LICOR and UNL. This is Dale McDermott. Notice what they're doing here. You notice there's some plexiglass filters, and this is the old John Norman way to get a light curve. We didn't have light sources in those days, so you use the sun and you use plexiglass filters, and you do it that way. Tim Arkebauer was there. Notice the boots. This is Bert in his nail apron again. This was 1992. The Midwest had a lot of flooding, and this field was no exception. We were up to our ankles in mud. But it was a really fun week. My wife and one child at the time were out of the country, and so we set up home base in our house. It was just a half mile from the field site. I showed my 14-year-old son this picture. He wasn't born yet when this was taken. And he immediately laughed at the ancient computers that were being used for this. There's Ed and Bert and Joel and Bill Dugas. Here's Bert trying his hand at topless housekeeping. He's a very good house guest. He cleaned up nicely at the end. That fall, John reported on the measurements we took at the ASA meetings. And this was the occasion for the famous blue data on blue background slide. So the world will never know just how well we did in that. As for the app note, it was a stunning success because from that day on, anytime anybody asked us about scaling, we'd hand them this document and then never hear from them again. So it was great. Bert the colluder, I mean collusion in the best sense of the word here. I'm just seeing if Paul Campbell's awake. But there's a lot of things. We had a lot of interactions on the 7500, but what I really want to talk about was the very first phone call. This must have been the late 90s. We had been asked for years to do an open path CO2 analyzer, and we took our time getting around to it, but when we finally decided that, yeah, we were going to go ahead and do this, we knew we needed some help. I mean, we were pretty sure we could make a good analyzer, but making it work well for eddy covariance, and we wanted to fit in easily with Campbell loggers, so we needed Bert's help. So I enthusiastically called up Bert to tell him the news that, yeah, we're going to do this. Bert, on the other hand, did not seem to be sharing my enthusiasm. He seemed surprisingly, un-Bert-like. But it just took him a minute to explain what was going on. It seems that Campbell's had decided about 2 weeks before that they were going to do an open path CO2 analyzer based on the work of Tilden Myers at Oak Ridge. And so, you know, at that point, that conversation could have gone a bunch of different directions. And I'm sitting there thinking, this is kind of awkward. And Bert says, okay, here's what we're going to do. We are going to drop our plans to do this. We're going to work with you guys. And the reason is, well, I think the community, the research community, will be farther ahead if we do this thing jointly than if we each do our own independently. And so that's a classic case of Bert putting the scientific community first ahead of some possible short-term profits. So we did manage to get together on this thing, And we, in fact, had a number of subsequent conversations about going the next step, making a combined sensor, a combined sonic and open path gas analyzer. Bert thought that maybe we could do it with fiber optics. We didn't think you could. But what stumped us was not the technical issues. It was some simple questions. Who's going to build it? Who's going to calibrate it? Who's going to fix it? And there just didn't seem to be any good two-company solutions to that problem. And so reluctantly, we kind of had to drop it. We knew full well somebody was going to do it, Lyco or Campbell or some third party. And lo and behold, they have. So this brings us to the fourth story. Bert the Mark. Mark as in victim of a scam. In the spring of 2002, I get this phone call from Bert, and Bert would rarely just call up and ask a question. Usually he had to give a 15-minute dissertation on the context of this question. And the context in this case was that Bert had been invited by the Chinese Academy of Sciences to basically come over there and get them up and going in flux measurements. And he considered this a really great honor, and he was excited about it, and they were going that summer, and there were some things he was pulling together, and one of the things they were putting together was he wanted, some of these sites were forested, so he wanted some tall tower multi-level sampling systems, and he was using our LI-7000 analyzer. There were all sorts of issues of, you know, flow rates and pressures and calibration and so on, and so he naively thought that I was going to be helpful in solving some of those things, and so he was calling me up. There were a whole bunch of phone calls. They started to come on evenings and weekends as he worked on this thing, as a deadline loomed and things weren't coming together fast enough. And it was always my sense that Bert needed a certain level of chaos in his life to be happy, but this was kind of rising above that level. He told me a few times, he's getting stressed about this. So being the helpful guy that I am, I began to think, how could I possibly make this worse? Enter Al Weiss. Al, as you might know, is a frequent reader of the New York Times online and a frequent forwarder of New York Times articles to his friends. Nowadays, when you get something forwarded to you by Al from the New York Times, it's a link to the website, but back in 2002, you got the whole article. There'd be a little message line, a note from your friend that forwarded it, a little ad, usually from Starbucks, and then the article. Very easy to doctor. Al and I were having lunch one day, and we were on the topic of Bert under stress, which was kind of an interesting topic, and we got on the particular question, what could be the worst possible thing, given Bert's situation, about to go to China, worrying he's going to be able to deliver on what he's promised, what could be the worst possible thing he could read about China in a reputable newspaper, say, the New York Times, for example? So we kicked some ideas around, and I went back to work. I couldn't get that out of my head, so I had to do something about it. So I took one of these things that Al had forwarded me and doctored it. Let me just read a couple lines. Charles F. Schwartz is me, by the way. Let me read a couple lines of what we have here. The latest sign of China's toughening anti-corruption campaign came today with the official announcement of a series of arrests of high-ranking officials within the Chinese Academy of Sciences. Down at the end, observers agree this was to signal a warning to foreign businesses about facilitating internal corruption. Further down in the article, we see that the Academy's overfunding of research projects involving global warming with excessive payments going to foreign companies who, in return for the business, pay back Academy officials through offshore accounts. In some cases, delivery is never made or expected. Now, just in case this is a little bit too subtle for Bert, we went to the last paragraph, which was definitely over the top. Singling out one flagrant example, spokesperson Bing described a plan by the Academy to outfit forested regions with tall towers loaded with expensive instrumentation to measure greenhouse gases. We see no evidence that the American companies involved in this deception had any intention of actually delivering this equipment. And now we will use those towers to hang the perpetrators instead, especially the foreign ones. Okay, we had the weapon, now how to deliver it. One choice, of course, is just send it to Bert, but, you know, he's too smart for that. We needed something a little more elaborate. So I forwarded this on to Al. Al was supposed to pick out somebody in the company with the right mix of gullibility and credibility so that they would widely circulate this thing and thereby unleash a firestorm of hand-wringing and concern on Mr. I've Been Invited to China. The person that Al chose to do the job, who by all accounts did it magnificently, was Dave Meek. So we sent the email, and then my conscience started to catch up with me. I thought, oh no, what have I done? Bert's going to have a stroke. Bert's going to have a heart attack. I spent, if it's any consolation, Paul, I spent a miserable afternoon. Mercifully, late in the day, Ed Switek calls me up and says, John, what do you know about this China situation? And I was so relieved that he was asking me about China rather than telling me about Bert in some hospital somewhere that I confessed immediately. So, fortunately, Bert survived. I guess the one thing I found out that I really appreciated, that Paul Campbell, when he found out that it was a hoax, just thought the whole thing was hilarious. So, Paul, I don't care what they say about you, you're okay in my book. Bert sort of got the last word. I had this waiting for me in my inbox the next morning where he congratulated me. He said he should have smelled a fish with a reference to being hung from the towers. But then to put me in my place, he said, don't get a swelled head. You still have to go some to get into Ed's league. So there we have Bert the Bulldog, the guy that would get his teeth into a problem and stick with it until he solved it. Bert the Cooperator, he'd do you tremendous favors even when there was nothing much in it for him. Bert the guy that always put the community, scientific community, ahead of any business decisions he made. And the perfect target for practical jokes. So thank you.